pinch of money. This is earlicious. On the next Cooking Up a Lounge Act, how to put sprinkles on your berries. The Lounge Act, every Wednesday, 8 to 10 p.m., WHFR 89.3, Dearborn. We're cooking up radio and making waves.
I'm a doctor.
I'm a teacher.
I live in the South.
California is my home.
I speak fluent Spanish.
No hablo español.
I have brown eyes.
My eyes are blue.
We're very different people, but we do have something in common. I made a donation to the Red Cross.
When disaster struck and I needed help, her gift to the American Red Cross changed my life.
When you support the American Red Cross, you change a life, starting with your own.
Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org and find out about life-changing opportunities in your area.
Mistress Flora, Fauna, and Merryweather.
In the world of fairy tales, Sleeping Beauty had three good fairies to protect her and all her woodland friends.
Oh, you dogs!
But in our world, protecting the beauty of the forest is the responsibility of everyone.
Listen well, all of you.
Wildfires are one of the most powerful forces known to mankind.
This is terrible.
But 9 out of 10 are caused by humans and can be prevented.
Whatever are we going to do?
Each of us can make a real difference in the fight against wildfires. Do your part to protect our friends in the forest.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
We'll all pitch in. You really think we can? If humans can do it, so can we.
Log on to SmokeyBear.com to find out what you can do. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
I know what you're going through.
I've been there.
Nobody else I know has been there.
It's not easy being a veteran.
Coming back from Iraq or Afghanistan. I had been so excited to come home.
But it's harder than I thought.
Not everyone understands that.
Things at home may be as you left them.
But you don't feel the same.
Join us at communityofveterans.org.
And connect to others who are going through the same thing.
Because no one knows what it's like to come back unless they were there.
Brought to you by Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
When you're pregnant, there are a lot of things you can't control, like all the changes to your body.
Hey, where did my waist go?
You can't even control how you feel sometimes.
I need cookie dough ice cream right now.
But there are some things you may have control over. Quitting smoking is one of them. Deciding not to smoke while pregnant is the first step in reducing the risks of premature delivery, low birth weight, childhood asthma, and SIDS. It's one of the most important things you can do for your baby's health. We can help you quit. Call Great Start at 1-866-66-START. Brought to you by the American Legacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford Community College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists share the latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. I'm David Twitchell, and you are listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.FM is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we will be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. And our guest today is Mr. Robert Collins. Mr. Collins was a captain in the Air Force, serving in the fields of avionics, ground communications, engineering physics, and intelligence in the Foreign Technology Division at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. After 22 years in service, he retired to pursue the subject of UFOs full-time. While in the Air Force, he was introduced to the world of UFOs by a Air Force Lieutenant Colonel Ernie Kellerstross in 1985. Ernie worked at the Foreign Technologies Division until retiring. After much research, Mr. Collins concluded that the government's UFO cover-up was real and went to great lengths to expose it. Robert Collins is co-author of the book Exempt from Disclosure, The Black World of UFOs. And we are pleased to have him with us today. Welcome to the show, Mr. Collins.
Well, it's nice to hear from you. Glad to be here.
That's good to finally have you on the show. I've been following your work for a while and trying to land you on the show. Finally got a hold of you. So we're familiar with the term foreign technology as a result of Colonel Philip Corso's book, The Day After Roswell. But what was your involvement in that field?
Well, Corso's book refers to there's two foreign technologies. One was the Army and the other one was the Air Force.
Okay.
And Corso was referring to the Army's foreign technology. I don't know whether they call it division or just group.
Mm-hmm.
But he was Army and the one I dealt with was Air Force.
Okay, so foreign technology, though, is, correct me if I'm mistaken, pretty much foreign technology, isn't it?
Right. It deals with anything that's outside the U.S., supposedly, although they do occasionally cross with people who do domestic programs to see what we're doing versus what the enemy's doing.
Okay. So what was your involvement in foreign technologies, may I?
I was in the branch at FTD called the Advanced Research Branch. Dealt with advanced technologies, you know, as far as what the Soviets were doing at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it included advances in different types of laser systems, communication systems, and other peripheral things. There's a bunch of, each branch has a bunch of analysts, and each analyst does a different piece of the work, that branch, and some other people were doing microelectronics. Others were doing space systems, Soviet space systems, and I was involved in laser systems and exotic type of communication systems.
Okay. Now, when we say exotic, how exotic are we getting? Are we talking about Russian?
Using things like vector potentials, magnetic field vector potentials, using potentials to either for computer switching or some type of subliminal communication systems. But it had nothing to do with you know, with our subject here. It was, I never had a formal access to any of this stuff, but I was in contact with a lot of people who did.
Okay, so where Corso has claimed to have hands-on extraterrestrial technologies, you don't make that claim?
No, I can't make that claim because if I did, I wouldn't be talking to you. If I had any formal access to this stuff, and if I weren't given some kind of special permission to sit there and talk to people, I couldn't say a word. And there are a lot of sources I talk to who are in those circumstances.
So what happened with Corso? He was talking.
Well, as far as I don't know what the Army does. I don't know how stringent the Army is, but in the cases of the Air Force, if you're read into a certain program and you're signed out, you are never, ever supposed to disclose anything about their program unless you get permission from the Air Force.
Well, top secret is top secret.
Secret is top secret, right.
Whether you're in the Air Force, the Army, or the Boy Scouts.
Right.
You know?
And also you have to consider, you know, Corso was at such an age that there was not a whole lot they could do to him.
I hear you. You know, it wasn't long after he published his book that he unfortunately passed away.
Right.
But he was, I don't know how old he was, do you, when he passed away?
No, I forgot.
Late 80s? Or?
Yeah, somewhere. I thought it was in the 90s, but I can't be sure of that.
Okay.
I know it wasn't that long ago.
Right, no, it wasn't. It wasn't. No, but I mean, how old was he?
Oh, I think he was roughly, if I'm wrong, or maybe I could be wrong about these, 86 or 88?
Yeah.
Was late, that late, somewhere in there?
Right, right. But you did hear now from about UFOs from this Lieutenant Colonel Ernie Kellerstrass. Kellerstrass, is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, Kellerstrass. Right, Kellerstrass.
S-T-R-A-S-S. Okay. So what did this Ernie Kellerstrass know about?
Well, I don't know. It's let me see if I can start. This is back in 1985, and when this first got started, and I happened to be chit chatting about the subject of UFOs and the vaults. You know, you're inside a big, huge. The whole building's a one big vault at FTD.
Okay.
So there's you don't open and close a vault. You just leave all your classified material on your desk at night and then walk out. And there's a guard at the other end of the big, huge section of that building that closes the vault door at midnight. And he takes care of all that security. We don't have to worry about closing and opening vaults. But there are all these analysts are within this office, within this section of this building, which is all vaulted. And got into a discussion about UFOs, and then one of my friends there put me on to Ernie and said, you ought to talk to Ernie. So that's how things got started. And Ernie had retired a number of years before I got there. And so I got on the phone with Ernie, and that's where it took off, and spent hundreds and hundreds of, or for maybe perhaps even thousands of hours talking about this subject. And then somehow I got in, and I forgot the details, somehow I got in contact with Bill Moore. And so we all... and then, of course, Jamie Shander was involved with that. And, of course, Bill at the time knew Rick Doty. Rick Doty was one of his prime sources at that time.
Was Doty in the service?
Yeah, Doty was still in the Air Force. He got out the same time I did back in 1988.
Okay.
And he was a master sergeant at the time and working in counterintelligence. And he made frequent visits, according to what he told me, to the whole time we were involved in this stuff, making visits to Area 51. But then a lot of these sources would talk to us. They'd keep secrets from us. They wouldn't tell us everything. They would keep secrets from us. But anyhow, back to Ernie. Ernie, I contacted Bill Moore, and then I flew out to L.A. back in 1986 for a meeting with TRW at the time. They were they were an Air Force contractor. And I had my meeting with them, and then I went off to see Bill Moore, and he showed, that's when I first saw the Eisenhower briefing document.
Okay.
He showed it to me and asked me if I knew anything about it, and I said, no, it's all new to me. Okay. And then, to make a long story short...
Well, if I may interrupt...
Okay.
For the benefit of those of our listeners who are not familiar with the Eisenhower briefing document, briefly describe what that is. Eisenhower briefing.
It was a briefing given to Eisenhower back in 1952. It's been through a lot of controversy, and it's been through a lot of forensics. And as far as the forensics are determined, and there was a guy named Westcott who said that the writing style in the Eisenhower briefing document was that of Helen Cotter, who supposedly wrote that document back in 1952.
Okay, talking about UFOs and...
Talking about recovery at Roswell.
Okay. So where was that found? Where was that briefing document?
Well, somebody had mailed it to Jamie Shander on 35-millimeter black and white film.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill Moore, they ran a printed copy off it. So Bill showed it to me when I was at TRW there in California back in 1986.
Mm-hmm.
And he just wanted to know if I had ever seen or knew about the subject. And I said, no, I didn't. But thereafter, you know, we started setting up meetings. I don't think you've read the book. We started setting up meetings where Bill and Jamie Shander, and then Rick Doty, and then, of course, Hal Putoff and Kit Green came in later on, what they call the aviary meetings. All these meetings got started back in 87.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'd set up all these meetings, and we'd meet in parks, and sometimes we'd meet at Ernie's house and have dinner, and other places we'd meet in motel rooms. But it was always a different location at a different time to make sure we'd... make sure we weren't being snooped on or bugged.
All right. and to discuss the UFO matter.
You're right.
Yeah.
And conversations, these meetings would go on for hours at a time. Mostly it was the process of trying to get some kind of disclosure going.
Right.
And at the time, you know, the government was very pro-disclosure because Reagan was in, and the Reagan administration was pushing this kind of stuff. And they really wanted to get something out there, and that's how the Eisenhower briefing document got leaked in the first place, because they wanted to start the process of trying to get this known to the public.
Right.
And so the primary role of those aviary meetings was to try to get a process in which disclosure would take place.
So Reagan was for UFO disclosure?
Oh, he was. Yeah, he was very much for it. In fact, we understand that too many of his advisors were against it, so he was fighting his own advisors.
Yeah, he was. He kind of hinted at the subject five different times.
Right.
Didn't he? Saying, "I wonder what it would be. You know, how quickly the world would come together if we were faced with a outside." Outside the threat,
from outer space or something.
Right, right.
You know.
And then
he tried to drop all kinds of little hints, and he even got the reason that is because of all the reported abductions. That's why he made that statement. And the abductions were a big thing back in the 80s, and well, they're still pretty big today.
Right.
And Rick Doty said that he was one of the investigators, and Reagan initiated an abduction study,
right?
An official government abduction study to find out if this stuff was real. Rick Doty says claims that they I wasn't involved in that stuff, but he claims that they set up cameras and they got subjects and they had these cameras watching the bed at night and watching other parts of the house on these different subjects. And he said they could find no evidence of these abductions or that really taking place. In fact, the victim was just fabricating up the story.
Now, who was claiming this? The study?
The government investigators, because they couldn't find any evidence of these abductions taking place, even though they had spent a lot of time and money trying to prove that they were taking place.
I explained to
Doty and some other people.
Doesn't work that way, does it?
That the aliens can get around this stuff.
Definitely.
They can get around your technology, and I've talked to so many abductees that they can just switch off those cameras, or they're completely invisible. The cameras can't see them.
Right.
And can be completely invisible to those cameras.
Right. Now, to our listeners, that may sound just fantastic. However, our visible light range that we can see in and our cameras can see in is very, very limited. All the cameras see slightly into the infrared, am I correct?
Right, and the ultraviolet.
And the ultraviolet.
Right.
So, and that's how they pick up some of these anomalies and people, it must be a lens flare. And a lot of times it is lens flare. I'm amazed at how many times, you know, we'll get pictures of alleged UFOs. Look, I'm taking a picture of the sun, and look at this object over here. That's a lens flare.
Right. You know,
in any
of this stuff, as you realize, you've got to be careful what you're looking at.
Right, that's right. But at the same time, it has been proven. Well, you know, 100 years ago, gamma rays, ultraviolet. What's ultraviolet rays? No such thing, because
right.
We can't measure it. Well, now we can.
Yeah, well, we realize that the current-day cameras, the digital cameras, are much more sensitive than the conventional film cameras are in the infrared and ultraviolet. I don't know if you knew that or not.
Right, I did know that, but even with the 35mm, they used to pick up these orbs or something like that. Now, a lot of times, orbs is nothing but lens flare or particles in the air.
Right, these digital cameras are also very sensitive at night, too.
Right, right.
And they can pick up all kinds of things that you couldn't see.
And they have tested these cameras, put them out on over these wheat fields, corn fields, and when they were trying to catch these either hoaxers or aliens or whatever it is that's making the crop formations. And they'll find the crop formation in the morning, and they'll check the film, and one frame it's not there, and the next frame it is.
Right.
And now go figure that one out. So yeah, they didn't prove anything by.
Well, most of these UFOs these days sit there, and I've had friends with their had digital cameras. They'll sit there in the near infrared or ultraviolet, and mm-hmm. you'll never know they're there until you take a picture of the sky, and all of a sudden this object shows up.
That's right. Jaime Musan has a video like that. Two different cameras taking a video of the sky. One is in infrared, and in one, you can see the UFO, and the other can't.
Right. So, yeah. And so that's what I've got my digital camera for, to get out there and take pictures of the sky, and then people will say, what are you taking a picture of?
Nothing that I can see.
Right, nothing you can see, right.
Let's wait and see what comes out on the film, huh?
Right.
I need to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. And I'm David Twitchell. You're listening to We Are Not Alone. And we're speaking with a UFO researcher and author, Mr. Robert Collins. Going back to our subject of cameras and lights and ultraviolet light, that's what I was trying to say, and infrared.
Okay.
And, also, we were talking about the Eisenhower briefing. Another controversial thing is the MJ-12 documents. A lot of controversy on that.
Well, the Eisenhower briefing is an MJ-12 document.
It is an MJ-12 yeah. document. Okay. So all of these MJ-12 documents, what's your take on them? Some of them real, some of them not. I know Stan Friedman says some of them are, some of them not.
Well, I agree with Stan, but the ones that are not are very few, and some of them could be, as he said, emulations.
Mm-hmm.
But I know anytime any documents get leaked, and I have a lot of experience with leaked documents because I used to get a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
They've always put a red herring in those things, and they leave it up to you to find the red herring.
For example,
if you put the red herring out there in the public domain, you could embarrass yourself.
For example.
You mean as far as, a lot of the stuff I got, there was a picture supposedly taken in a certain year, and it wasn't taken in that year. It was taken about 10 years before that, things like that.
Now, who is doing this? Who is putting this
well,
in?
Some of my sources were doing that.
Some of your
sources? They were doing that to me, and they leave it up to you. In fact, Tim Cooper will tell you that because he got a majority of the MJ-12 documents, and even his own source, Cantwell, told him at the time that he was getting those documents that they put red herrings in what you get. So be careful of the red herrings because they will stick something in there that's totally bogus, even though everything else might be real.
Okay, you say they. Who are they? Who's trying to trick you up?
They was, I don't know whether it was Cantwell or one of Cantwell's friends or sources that Tim Cooper may not have known him, but he knew Cantwell because he had met with Cantwell a couple of times, and Cantwell was in his early 90s at the time.
All right.
In fact, he may be getting certain documents which are totally bogus in with the other stuff that is real.
Oh.
So this is like a cat and mouse game to test the person, the researcher or the person getting the documents. Do you have yourself together or don't you?
Hmm.
Are you able to ferret out what's good and what's bad? And that's what makes this area so tough.
Yeah. So it's a matter of disinformation.
It's a matter of disinformation mixed in with the real stuff.
Like the line from The Exorcist, the demon mixes truth with lies to confuse you.
Right. But he'll tell you the truth somewhere in there.
Yeah, the truth somewhere in there.
Yeah, he's going to tell you the truth. And as they say, in any disinformation, even if every document you get is disinformation, there's always facts, there's truths in the disinformation.
Mm-hmm.
It's all mixed together like a lot of the SERPO stuff.
Right.
It's all mixed up, and most of that surplus stuff is trash, but there's maybe 10% that's true.
Yeah, now for those of our listeners who are not into the SERPO thing, S-E-R-P-O, correct?
S-E-R-P-O, right.
S-E-R-P-O. And I have gone to their website and I've seen a lot of trash in there. In my opinion, I mean, I have witnessed too much in my life to discount anything. Like Friedman says, I keep it in my gray basket. But at the same time, there are some things in there, and I say, what? Who are they trying to kid?
Right.
You know? I just don't buy anything that comes down the pike.
Yeah, well, you have to treat a lot of this with just common sense. You don't have to be brilliant.
Right.
You just use common sense.
Right. But then there are people out there that says, oh, use common sense. How could there possibly be any UFOs or beings that are smarter than we humans, you know?
Well, that's not common sense. That's a lack of foresight.
That's true. Well, that's their common sense anyway.
Yeah, that's not a matter of what's it. It's a lack of knowledge, you know. When you've got to have an understanding or a body of knowledge to be able to use the common sense you have to be able to find out, you know, what is and what is not.
Right.
You know, what sticks and what doesn't stick.
Right. One can be very intelligent and yet ignorant.
Right. Yeah. You can't. Einstein couldn't tie his shoes or something.
Well, you know, isn't no shame in being ignorant. We're all ignorant in one subject or another. The stupid part is being unwilling to learn.
Well, if you're being ignorant is not a crime. It's just the arrogance that you think you know it all.
Right, right, right.
And then not willing to research things out or to check on things.
Right. Well, I think
that's tantamount to, I guess, stupidity or something.
Right. I think that anyone who has gotten this far into the show, into our show, we can't classify as being that way. I mean, they might be ignorant. They might want more knowledge, which is just great, you know. But the old saying,
the more you know, the less you know.
Yeah, that's it.
Right.
Yeah, but a lot of people will tune into a show like this or flip on the TV and see a show on UFOs and say, oh, that nonsense, you know, I'm going to go watch Beavis and Butthead, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Oh, I know what you mean.
So that's their line of thinking. So what was your opinion of the UFO phenomenon before your involvement with it in the service?
Oh, well, I think ever since I was age 12 or 13, I had an intention interest in UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I had, but I just when I was that age and kind of middle school, you know, just beginning high school,
right,
I had all this, read all these UFO books.
Hmm.
And I just, for some reason, I just thought it was all true. And, it, you know, it just had to, intuitively, I just thought it had to be true.
Right.
Doesn't mean everything you read is true.
No.
It just means that the thought the subject was true.
Right.
And so I guess I've had an interest in this, and then I, for almost 20, 30 years, I lost an interest in it until I got to FTD back in 1985, and all of a sudden I rekindled my interest in it.
Right. Right. It's amazing that you were interested in it previously, and you were open-minded to the subject. A lot of people that I ask, my listeners would know that I ask this question of most of my guests, and most of the time I get, oh, I thought it was nonsense until, one, I saw one myself, or two, I saw the evidence myself, you know, like Hynek, Jalen Hynek, was such a skeptic, down-to-earth skeptic, until he was forced as a part of his job to look at the evidence, and then he became a believer, right?
Well, according to my information, Hynek was pretending to be a skeptic. He knew about MJ-12.
Oh, really?
Yes, and so did Carl Sagan.
Hmm.
Your debunker.
Right, right.
Yeah, even Rick Doty was shocked that he never knew Carl Sagan was read in until he ran into him at Sandia back in the mid-80s.
He didn't know he was what?
Read in. right into the program.
Oh, I see.
He went to a special meeting at Sandia dealing with this subject, and there was Carl Sagan, he said. And it was shocked him because he had no idea that Carl was read into the program.
So are you saying that Sagan wasn't the skeptic that he claimed
to
be?
No, he just pretended to be. He was like Menzel, your UFO debunker.
Right, right, right. Yeah, Menzel was a part of it, I believe.
Yeah, he's listed in the EBI Eisenhower briefing document.
Right, right. But so why are they, why do you think the people like Sagan and Menzel went the route of being the skeptic, even though they were, as you say, read in, they knew the truth?
Right.
Why?
That was their job. That's what they were hired to do. To stop or to get the public so not to believe in these things, so there wouldn't be any kind of, I guess, public panic.
And then there's the opposite way. There was a lot of rumor that people within ufology are really working for the government, trying to throw disinformation out there.
Well, some of that's true. There are reports of some of these people, some of these agents attending MUFON meetings, or back in the old days, attending, Heinrich's UFO group too. There were agents that supposedly sat in on their meetings. To collect the intelligence to see what these groups were doing.
So the whole idea is to muddy the waters.
Right.
So you
right.
don't so, know.
And, yeah, that was the purpose of the SERPO stuff, and that Annan source put out all that SERPO stuff, and you had a Victor Martinez out there in California who spread it all across the Internet, and all of a sudden this Annan source just disappeared. And you haven't heard from Annan in over a year.
Mm-hmm.
So he did his job. He muddied the waters. He put out... He just took the true stuff and mixed it in with all the false stuff, and then it completely discredits the subject, and then the source just disappears.
So what would you say would be the the key to sorting out the trash from the truth?
Experience and knowledge. It's a learning curve of learning, getting so much information and being exposed to so much of that information, and then learning from that experience, you can actually begin to sort things out, and as they say, use common sense.
Right.
And eventually, you can get to some things that are true.
Right. Right. Yeah, it does get so convoluted at times that. The only thing that I can really trust is my own eyes, my own experience. You know, when I was 14, I had a sighting. And that's what got me going on the UFO subject. And that's the only thing I know for is a true fact, is what I saw. But,
yeah, I've seen UFOs at least three different times.
Have you?
In fact, one went over the top of a house here back in September 1998 at about 10 a.m., around the top of the house here. And then I've seen that out in Arizona. I've seen something like 14 of them, or so, anywhere from the huge spheres all the way down to the little saucer types.
Any triangles?
No, I didn't see any triangles. I've seen videos of it, but I haven't seen any of those for myself.
But you have seen UFOs personally?
Oh, yeah, at least, as I said, at least on three different occasions.
And how did they maneuver?
Well, the Phoenix daylight sighting was in Phoenix, Arizona, at a friend's house there in the morning. About the afternoon, about 2 o'clock. You had the couple of disc-shaped objects, and they'd zoom in and zoom out, and then one of them would sit there and change shape on you as you had them in binoculars.
Oh my goodness!
They would sit there and morph, and then change shape, and then get into all little different types of oddball shapes, and then come back to a saucer shape.
I see that you can understand, if you hadn't have seen that personally, you can understand why the average Joe Blow on the street would say, well, that's just simply impossible.
Right.
It defies the laws of physics.
Yeah, as well, it's I always think of it's our knowledge of our physics. It's not nothing to do with the physics that's way out there in the universe somewhere.
Right. The known laws of physics, maybe we just don't know all the laws of physics, right? So,
well, it's I would term that it's not the laws of physics so much. The laws of physics are universal, else we wouldn't be here.
Right.
The galaxies wouldn't be there. It's the engineering that it's kind of like the engineering physics rather than just the basic laws of physics.
Right. So tell our listeners about your book, Exempt from Disclosure.
Well, it starts out in the beginning of the book, starts out with all the meetings and the filming we did for the show back in 1988, UFO Cover-Up Live.
Okay.
And then it proceeds on to what the basic understanding of what MJ-12 is, to give the reader a chance to get familiar with MJ-12, and then it launches into the primary players that dealt with this subject and the cover-up. One is James Jesus Angleton, who became deputy director of counterintelligence at the CIA in 1954. Mm-hmm. And then we move on to Dulles. Dulles was CIA director. In fact, as he hired Angleton, and then we move on to Helms, and Helms was a came in the 70s. But those three key players, and then the final personality in that is Richard Doty.
Hmm.
And Richard Doty is tied into all these other people.
Okay.
And so all these four different players, it's people who were involved in the counterintelligence and the cover-up.
Hmm.
And then the final section is divided into three sections. The final section deals with facilities, and it starts out with Wright-Patterson, then moves to Los Alamos and then Area 51.
Okay. What is really going on at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base?
Well, today nothing's going on.
Really?
Yes. Everything was closed up. The vaults here were sealed back in 1982, 83 because of all the so-called security leaks. So they decided to close everything up and move it out to either Los Alamos or Area 51.
There's security leaks, huh?
Yeah. It's right. They're super, super... even today, it's just like if you really get close to the subject, they are all over it.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is very carefully watched. There's a lot of surveillance going on,
mm-hmm.
and it seems like it's gotten worse and worse and worse. They've become more and more secret about it.
Mm-hmm.
They've shut down a lot of the leaks, you know, the source leaks. They've kind of gotten very quiet about the whole subject. You don't hear as much as you used to hear back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s,
right.
And even in the 90s, and it's gotten very quiet. And that means they're trying to keep this as secret as they... It's almost like 1947.
Hmm.
They're trying to keep this as secret as they can.
Right.
And just clamp down and just keep it secret. In other words, they don't want to change... They don't want to change, and the only way they're going to change is if they're forced to change.
Mm-hmm. But is it true that some of the wreckage or all of the wreckage was from the 47 crash at Roswell taken to Wright-Patterson?
The debris itself, the wreckage itself, and the bodies were taken to Wright-Patterson. We think that the craft itself went up to Los Alamos.
Okay. So they kept the wreckage there at Wright-Patterson for X number of years, and then they shipped it out?
Well, the whole time, the Kittsburgh object, Kittsburgh, Pennsylvania, I think, was brought to Wright-Patterson, too.
Okay. Now, the more I hear about the Kittsburgh thing, that bell-shaped thing with the hieroglyphics, so to speak, on around it, the more I hear about it, the more I believe that it was... not Russian, but one of our own experimental craft that left over from the Germans during the Second World War.
I've
the right
heard
track?
A lot of different stories. I've heard Russian.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard ours. I've heard alien.
Mm-hmm. I've always believed it was alien, but the more I've read about it and heard about it, I'm inclined to believe it was one of ours. But what's your take on it?
Well, the reports of this object, when it came entering the atmosphere, the thing flew straight and level. I don't know of any satellite that can fly straight and level.
Well, if it was unmanned, it was supposed to have made a curve, too.
Yeah, supposed to have made a curve, but it was actually, they said it actually flew straight and level like an airplane would fly.
Okay.
And I don't know of any man-made object that can do that.
Well, especially
and it's a dummy payload. It's not a, it doesn't have its own propulsion system except for little rockets on the side. Those little rockets won't make it fly straight and level.
No, especially without wings.
Right.
Especially
without wings too. Right.
A bell-shaped object is not going to really fly straight and level, is it? It's going to kind of drop, isn't it? Although a meteorite could come at an angle and hit the Earth.
The meteorites come down. They come at an angle, but they're always going towards the ground.
Right, right.
This thing always were reported to actually fly straight and level and then make turns.
Now, didn't the Kecksburg object come from northwest? Am I correct, or do you happen to know the?
I forgot. It's been such a long time since I thought about it.
Yeah, it came over Canada and Ohio and landed in Pennsylvania. So it was kind of northwest. So it could possibly have been a meteor. Isn't it typical for meteors to go from west to east?
The meteors don't have cone shapes, do they?
And, well, I guess they could. But when they're burning up in our atmosphere, they become round. No, they're not bell-shaped or cone-shaped, no, not at all. And I don't believe they have hieroglyphics on the side either.
Right.
So one more time, I have to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the only station making waves here in on your radio, and 89.3 FM in Dearborn area and Detroit area and all over the world on WHFR.FM on your computer.
Hungry?
The Skylight Cafe is convenient and offers a variety of food options to hungry students and staff.
Pizza, daily specials, sandwiches, and entrees.
How about ordering something hot off the grill?
Or if you just want a snack.
The Skylight Cafe has cookies, desserts, chips, fresh fruit, and a wide variety of beverages.
There's even a soup and salad bar. Ours are
Monday through Thursday, 7:30 a.m. to 7 p.m. and
Friday, 7:30 a.m. to 2 p.m.
The Skylight Cafe.
And I'm David Twitchell, and this is We Are Not Alone. We're speaking with researcher, scientist, and author, Mr. Robert Collins. We're talking about his book, Exempt from Disclosure. And where can people find out about that, your work and your book?
Well, they can go to Amazon. Amazon carries the book, all you have to do is put Exempt from Disclosure in a Google search engine, and it will pull it up.
Do you have your own website? Or?
It's www.ufoconspiracy.com.
UFOconspiracy.com.
Yeah, it's one word, ufoconspiracy.com.
And what do you think, of the origin of these UFOs? I heard they're extraterrestrial. I heard they're other dimensional. What planet are they from? I mean, do you think they're extraterrestrial, other dimensional?
I've heard a lot of talk about dimensionals and others, and I think a lot of that is to do with people who see these things appear and disappear and seem to go through go through windows or doors or something of that.
Mm.
But you're just looking at high-tech alien technology.
High-tech alien technology.
Right. And it's the only thing dimensional about it is they can go through those go through mountains and go through walls and go through windows because of the they do a space-time shift, and of course, you know, it's beyond our technology to do things like that and just be able to pass through solid objects.
Right. So, in other words, just because they can pass through or appear to pass through solid objects does not necessarily mean they're other dimensional, right?
Right. It just means you're dealing with a high-tech technology, which some sources say in some cases they're 10,000 years ahead of us.
10,000, at least.
At least, right.
At least, yeah. Be like ants looking at our technology, right?
Yeah, for some peculiar reason, these so-called advanced beings sure want to be here, because if they didn't want something from this planet, they wouldn't be here.
What do you think they want?
You know, it looks like they want your DNA.
Yeah. Which
that if we're so inferior, they sure want the DNA to fix whatever their problem is.
A lot of talk about the abduction phenomenon is that they're trying to make a crossbreed or hybrid of with their DNA and ours.
Which makes no sense if we're so inferior. So we must have some value.
Or common common DNA properties.
Yeah, or commonality or value.
Right.
But you wouldn't want to mix your DNA with something that's so far below your level of technology that you would produce an inferior species.
Well, if you did so, wouldn't it be for the purpose of heightening the quality of that lower species?
Yes and no, because a lot of these hybrids, I understand, can't live in our own atmosphere.
Right.
They can't live here very long, or they're not totally immune to a lot of our viruses.
Right. Well, they wouldn't be, no, would they? What do you think of now? Are you into that the abduction phenomenon? Other than
superficially, UFO? Other than the few abductees I've dealt with, no, I don't really concern myself with abductions. Other than the few people I talk to.
Okay, so your expertise is the nuts and bolts UFO type.
Right. The book Exempt from Disclosure, is not a history book. It deals with the core story of a cover-up.
Okay.
It doesn't get into the history of UFOs like Richard Dolan's books do.
Mm-hmm.
He'll cover the history over from 1947 to 71 or 73, and from 73 up to 91.
Right.
But it doesn't get into a history. In fact, Richard Dolan's latest book quotes this book throughout his book.
We want to get Richard Dolan on the show. We had his wife, the lovely Karen Dolan, on the show, and we want to get him on too. And I assume he speaks highly of your book. I guess he's mentioned it enough times in his books, right?
Well, yeah. I think he mentions it. This book gets mentioned starting from about page 138 all the way up to, what is it, page 565. So this book is mentioned any number of times starting on those pages.
Yeah, we'll have to ask him about that when we get him on. But so your book, Exempt from Disclosure, deals with the cover-up.
Yeah, the core of the cover-up, the actual players involved, who orchestrated the cover-up, how it was done, who did what, and what they knew.
Yeah. There are those who say, you know, the government can't keep a secret. How would you answer them?
Well, if you don't believe in UFOs, they can keep a secret.
If you don't believe, yeah. Right. And
doesn't take the government. All it takes is the public is their own worst enemy.
Right. Edgar Mitchell says it's a secret that's being kept in plain sight because,
right,
you know, who's going to believe it?
Right. Who's going to believe it?
Let's tell them the story right up front. Who's going to believe it, right?
Right. That's totally true. There's enough circumstantial evidence out there, enough videos, enough witnesses.
I guess.
To make any case in any court in any country.
But so many people are afraid to, the witnesses are afraid to come forward for fear of ridicule. And is that because the government has made it that way, or science has made it?
I think it's more of a, I said the public is their own worst enemy. I said it's more of the mindset. It's amazing. The mindset today, you would think by all this time things would change. Mm. It's just like racism. You think racism, by this time there wouldn't be any racism.
Right.
Well, there is racism.
Yeah.
And so you think by this time that these attitudes that you had back in 1947 would be gone. Right. Well, they're not gone. They're still here.
But it is advancing because by the latest polls, most people believe the UFO phenomenon is real.
Most of those people wouldn't tell their best friend.
That's it. It's secret being kept in plain sight. We're all walking around with a secret that, maybe we've had a sighting. Maybe our friends have had a sighting.
But you wouldn't tell your friend.
You wouldn't tell your friend.
Yeah.
And you
feel embarrassed about it.
Right. So you get two friends who perhaps are both abductees.
Right.
But one won't tell the other.
Right. I've seen that.
Yeah. Too many times. So if it's going to be, you're going to have that, keep that secrecy.
Perpetuates it. And even the groups I deal with, the people I deal with on the internet are keeping everything secret and private. I said, you act just like the government.
Yeah. I had I'm with MUFON. I'm an investigator for MUFON. And I had a guy file a report that he thought he saw some secret plane. And he filed his report with MUFON, and the case was given to me. And when I emailed him to say, give me your phone number so I can call you and follow up on this, he emails me back. He says, how do I know you're not with the government? Now, if you're afraid that I'm with the government, why did you report this in the first place? And it wasn't a UFO he thought he saw. He thought he saw a secret government plane. So
so now it's still a secret.
So, now, yeah. it's like the government likes to say, that wasn't a flying saucer from another world. That was experimental government plane that we're testing. Over the entire state of Arizona, over Phoenix, over the rooftops,
right.
Right.
Yeah, it does all these things that it shouldn't be doing, so therefore it must be government. But the government wouldn't fly secret anything over populated areas.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, that doesn't...
Yeah, Air Force regulations, and they wouldn't drop flares over populated areas either.
No.
You'd have a lawsuit.
Certainly.
And so those flares over for the Phoenix lights and all that stuff they made up is just fabricated because, first of all, as we just said, the government wouldn't fly experimental anything over a populated area, and they certainly wouldn't drop flares.
Right. That's definite. the pictures of the alleged flares that stayed in one place did not fall.
Right.
They said, that was the flares over the mountain, and then when they went out, it was going behind the mountain. But what about the people in Phoenix that was looking up at this craft?
Right.
They don't address that. But all these people throughout Arizona who saw this craft, to include Fife Symington, the then governor.
Right, not only that, the objects don't have the spectrum of flares.
Right. Do not have the spectrum of flares. What do you mean?
Right, they had color spectrum.
Oh, right, that's right. Yeah, they tested that, computer generated tested it, and those lights could not be identified with any known light source.
Right.
So, and then you got the guys that are talking about, you must have seen
B-52 or B-42, whatever. And the Going guy says that you could land all of our planes on this craft, on the wing of this craft that he saw.
Mm-hmm.
And
I can believe that. These spheres hovering over Phoenix, in binoculars, they look pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But just eyeballs, in binoculars, you can see the airplanes that go by them on the way to the Sky Harbor Airport.
Right.
Just go right by these spheres, and these spheres were a couple hundred times bigger than these aircraft.
Hmm.
Each one of them. And I had about five of them in binoculars. And they were just sitting there hovering over the city.
Now, what year was this?
January 1998.
98. Okay, so the Phoenix Light incident was 97.
That was in 97, but these ones I saw were much more as big a scale as the Phoenix Lights in 97.
Right. Well, we've had Dr. Kaitai on the show. Am I pronouncing that right?
The what?
Dr. Kaitai Kaitai? Yeah, that wrote the book on the Phoenix Lights.
Oh, yeah, sure. Uh-huh.
And she said, you know, the 97 thing was really when they brought it to light, but she had been seeing these things and photographing them long before,
right.
Years before.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, years after, it continued.
Sure.
So.
Yeah. Well, it's these ones, if I'm trying to remember, because I was counting these things and watching them, they were all over the place. I had ones, the saucer shapes would come up behind the mountains, and I could, right next to me, and I had the mountains right next to me, and these saucer types, they're kind of like a light whitish gray, which would come up above the mountaintops and then sink below the mountaintops, and they were off to my east, they were off to the west, and then I had the spheres right in front of me.
Sounds like flares to me, doesn't it?
Yeah. I think I counted upwards of 14 or 15 of them.
My goodness. Now, was this the daylight setting or the...
This was at night.
At
this
night.
This was about 8 or 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah. Flares certainly do not behave in that manner, do they?
No. I know. No, I... flares... flares, yeah, right. Flares are out of the question.
Right.
Yeah.
And then Fife Symington made fun of that incident, and everybody thought, well, now he's the governor, or he's our elected official, he's an ex-pilot, he should know, you know. Certainly he should make fun of this. And then 10 years later, he comes out and says, I was just trying to keep things light. I saw it myself, and
right.
It wasn't of this world. And, well, now people put him, a lot of people put him in the same box as, you know, Heaven's Gate or whatever, which is a shame. It's just a shame.
But you see what he did. He came out and said he saw these things, but I didn't see any real reaction over that. I mean, I get the impression that people didn't want to believe what he was saying.
Hmm. Well, you've seen James Fox's I Know What I Saw, right?
Right.
That was on the History Channel, and I watched that, and it was excellent. It's really preaching to the choir for ufologists, but for those who are not familiar with the UFO phenomenon, it's an excellent movie. They had Fife Symington in Washington spearheading the... National Press Club press conference, right? And he seems to be making a statement to the world with his admission that he saw it. I would say.
Yeah, well, my main drawback about this is there won't be any. I don't think there's going to be any real disclosure. It's going to come out the hard way, like you know, and it'll be in a not so nice form, like we had 9/11 in Wall Street.
Mm. What form do you think it'll be?
Oh, it'll be like something real damning, almost. I think Richard Dolan described it as a Swiss sword. And I think he's got it. It won't be too nice.
Do you think?
And it'll be a shocker like 9/11 Wall Street was.
Do you think E.T. will be the one doing the disclosing?
Either it'll be something either very deliberate and very stark and very hard, or it will be something catastrophic, like one of their machines malfunctioning and going down in a populated area, heavily populated area, and something which you can't cover up.
They'll try.
Oh, good luck.
I'll bet they'll try. But, I think that I did a show once when I talked about it. I said, do you think they'll come out with it? And at the end of the show, I said, don't count on it, folks. I think E.T. will land on the White House lawn first, you know.
Well, I don't know what form it'll take, but I don't think it's going to be very nice.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, I hope you're wrong about that. I hope that...
I always hope I'm wrong, but the way I've seen things go and all these predictions about disclosure, and of course it never happens.
It never happens. It never happens. But I think it's leaking out a little at a time. I think people are more and more accepting it. So once again, your website, Mr. Collins, Robert Collins.
Yes, www.ufoconspiracy.com.
And the title of your book again is?
Exempt from Disclosure.
Do you plan on writing another one?
I don't know what I'm going to be doing. It depends on the book. The one thing about the book, it's not meant for the beginner.
Okay.
You have to have some kind of background on the subject.
I see.
And because it is orientated. It's got a lot of details in it. It's got a lot of technical stuff. And so you just can't whip through the book.
Okay.
It's a lot of information packed in the 196 pages.
Beautiful. Okay, Mr. Robert Collins, thank you so much for joining us. Afraid we're going to have to leave you right now, but we can do it again sometime.
All right. Well, thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And if you have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. This show, as well as all the forum shows, is now being archived at WHFR.fm's website. Click on the forum button on the homepage. We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, UFOimplications.com. That's UFOimplications.com. And I want to wish all our loyal listeners a very safe and happy Thanksgiving holiday season. Stay tuned to WHFR.fm, the station making waves, for the best in alternative programming. I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. Until then, I'm David Twitchell, reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
Are tigers, cubs,